When some loud bragger tries to put me down and says his school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
Hey, hey, take it away. It's
so fight. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you'll hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we speak with Bo Bernard, the executive director of the International Gaming Institute at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, about where the IGI is going and how it's going to get there.
I'm proud to wear it now when I cruise around the other parts of the town. I got my calendar back.
Bo Bernard recently was named Executive Director of the International Gaming Institute at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Harrah's Hotel College. The nonprofit IGI offers research and educational programs for the global gaming industry. In 2010, Bernard was named Executive Editor of the UNLV Gaming Research Journal and a Lindsay Fellow at UNLV's Brookings Mountain West. In 2009, he received the Spanos Award, one of the university's top teaching awards. In this interview, Bernard reflects on where the IGI has gone since its founding by gaming legend Shannon Bybee and support from Anchor Gaming founder Stan Fulton, and how it impacts the gaming and tourism industry in Nevada and around the world. He spoke with me at the Stan Fulton building on the UNLV campus in December. Bo Bernard, thank you for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's great to see you, and congratulations on your new position as Executive Director of the International Gaming Institute.
Well, thanks, Roger. I'm excited. Thanks for having me.
It is. It's always been a great location here. I actually followed it when it was being formed.
Yes.
The late Shannon Bybee was a very good friend of mine.
Yeah.
He was certainly the instigator behind this. And, of course, if you didn't have Stan Fulton, you wouldn't have anything. So
all of those statements are true. And I was as well. I was a grad student at Shannon's at the time.
Right.
I remember this building going up and thinking, boy, it'd be cool to work there someday.
Yeah.
And they signed me up, and we worked way up the ranks. But I wouldn't have done it without my mentor,
right,
Shannon Bybee.
Absolutely.
Certainly.
Let's start with what this has become. What is it, 10 years now?
Yeah, we're working on 10 years plus, actually,
okay,
depending on whether you count the building or the actual institute itself.
Well, as you know, Shannon and Stan had a vision for this. Do you think it's achieved the vision and the prestige that they would have wanted after all this time?
You know, I think they'd be thrilled with, for example, the fact that the International Gaming Institute exists not only here, but in South Africa. We just got back from delivering the first Pan-Africa Gambling Gaming Regulator Symposium,
mm-hmm,
to people from all over the continent. And that was the vision, right?
Right.
It was doing two things, bringing Las Vegas's unique take and unique expertise on the global gaming industry to the globe, but also bringing the globe here. I mean,
sure,
right across the hallway here, we have the Swedish Gaming Control Board,
right,
the whole board,
mm-hmm,
coming here still, because this is where you have to come to study. So, I think the vision was a beautiful, beautiful,
mm-hmm,
vision. And the nice thing for me as somebody who works in these offices every day is you really get to learn a lot about the global gaming industry, because it does come to your doorstep.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you have regulators from all over the world that come here for your courses.
And operators
symposiums
as well. Yeah. So it really is, it's a nice way for me as a teacher, too. We then take it to our gaming management courses here in the college,
right,
with the undergraduates and the graduate students, and you're able to apply lessons learned over here,
right,
over on the main campus with our undergraduates and graduate students.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what plans you have to change anything or upgrade some of the offerings that IGI has for both the university, the students, and for the industry itself.
Sure. I mean, a number of exciting developments. This is about to become, we hope, sort of the centerpiece of a new hospitality campus, or old facilities in the hotel school in the heart of campus. We love them, but they're old, decrepit, mm-hmm, beaten up. And while we're not going to implode them Las Vegas casino style, we're certainly looking to move out sometime soon, where this really then becomes the heartbeat of the entire hospitality community.
Right.
So that sort of structural development's very exciting. And I've said that I think there are two primary areas of forward movement for us as we look to the types of courses that we'll be offering, hopefully, to the global gaming industry,
mm-hmm,
moving forward. One would focus, of course, on the globalization of the brick-and-mortar industry,
right,
and the ways in which, for example, my great-grandfather, when he passed away, was allegedly the oldest dealer on the Strip when he,
mm-hmm,
dealt at the Marina. He didn't have to know what was happening in Beijing or
right,
what Beijing
sure
was going to do tomorrow. We'd like to hold symposia on, for example, what Beijing does on a Tuesday, assuming Taiwan legalizes on a Monday. Mm-hmm. That sort of global reach is, again, something that it wasn't too long ago.
Sure.
Even the most expert folks in the gaming industry didn't have to worry about that
right.
stuff, right? So the internationalization of the brick-and-mortar industry is mm-hmm. one area of focus, and the other obvious one is the internetization of this product more generally. Mm-hmm. As my colleague and mentor up north, Bill Eaton, has said, it'll be interesting to see if we follow the path of theaters, right, where these 2,000-seat theaters were where we used to consume
right.
the movie product in these cathedrals of movie consumption, and now we consume it on our iPhone,
right? Yep.
One wonders whether the cathedrals of gambling consumption might face a similar challenge moving forward as mm-hmm. gambling is consumed in different spaces. So those are the two obvious directions in the future. But certainly we want to maintain all the strengths we have in, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. regulatory education, gaming operations education that takes place every week here
sure.
on campus.
Sure, no question. You know, I'm sure you've noticed this trend. Gaming has really been embraced by academia all over the country and the world, for that matter. As gaming expands, there's need for more education. You can get, gaming degrees or at least minors in gaming and at a lot of colleges and universities across the country. Does that present you with a challenge of trying to draw those people in who want to get degrees in that area do you have to differentiate yourself? Why should you come to UNLA instead of University of Houston, for example?
Gosh, I think that's probably one way to look at it, but I look at it like, I mean, these are all institutions. When you look at the groups that are adding gaming management mm-hmm. majors, they're coming here to learn how to build them because mm-hmm. we've built the first one
sure.
and the largest one. We have the most gaming faculty by far. Mm-hmm. We were meeting yesterday with Penn State, a fantastic program that's very fortunate to have one very strong faculty member.
Right, sure.
We have six. And so it's a situation where as the major grows, certainly we hope to grow alongside it. Certainly there are challenges. But in the academic sense, it's not quite like the private sector mm-hmm. in that we'd much rather build bridges with the University of Macau than think of ourselves as
sure.
competitors. So
mm-hmm.
we work closely with our friends at San Diego State. Mm-hmm. We're involved in tribal education and sorts of programs that they offer there than to think competitively. It doesn't often play out that way
mm-hmm.
as you sort of battle for undergraduates in the same way
right.
that we might battle with San Diego State for a
sure.
new basketball player, for
right.
example.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're good students, but they can choose where they want to, and they can also come here as to kind of round out their education.
And I would say too, that was Shannon's spirit. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if there ever was a collaborator in the gaming
That's
industry,
true, right.
That was Shannon's spirit. He, mm-hmm. he couldn't really think otherwise. So,
right.
so yeah, I think that's a real legacy.
Right. Now, you mentioned the training regulators. That's always been kind of the bread and butter of this building here. Is that going to continue or even ramp up?
Boy, I sure hope so. It's been a nice fit. Mm-hmm. And Shannon Bybee, as the founding director, and Patty Becker following up, mm-hmm. who also was a regulator, of course, they both would note that this is sort of a perfect match
mm-hmm.
in that regulators have to be very much in the industry, have to be
right.
embedded in the industry, have the finger on the pulse of the industry. But they're also independent of the
mm-hmm.
industry and provide a very important sometimes critical, sometimes complimentary voice sort of assessing the industry. So in many ways, we and regulators have a lot in common
mm-hmm.
as educators and as regulators in that we're in the industry and very much studying very closely the workings of the industry, but we also have a level of independence that I think provides tremendous value to the industry, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And also, you do this for corporations. Explain how that works and you're
sure.
going to ramp that up.
One of the things we can offer that nobody else on the planet can offer, having just said I don't have a competitive bone in my
right.
body, let me tell you why we
exactly,
can out-compete
right.
here. So yesterday, we had a group of individuals where in the morning they were listening to a casino, actually a slot operations analysis class. And then in the afternoon, we go out into the field, into our incomparable backyard,
mm-hmm.
and apply the lessons learned in the ivory tower
sure, right.
Out in the real world
mm-hmm.
at the best backyard in the
right.
planet. There's nobody else on the planet that can provide, again, the sort of classroom learning in the morning and then the applied learning in the afternoon. And the really exciting thing about those afternoons is that almost all of the time, they're run now by UNLV alums,
right.
by people who themselves were students of Shannon Bybee,
right.
Or more broadly of the hotel college. And the alumni network's really impressive, not just up and down the strip where presidents seem to be in every other property, but internationally. It's amazing to check into a Seoul, South Korea hotel
mm-hmm.
and be greeted by five managers at the downtown Seoul Hilton
right.
who
yeah.
are UNLV grads. And so, again, I don't think that's something that even 10 years ago we could have anticipated, that Shannon could have anticipated,
right.
And it's something that's terribly exciting.
Yeah, no question about it. you know, non-gaming revenue is becoming such an important part of the industry as a whole. I know at the last G2E, I heard Jim Murren and Michael Levin both say they only get 30% of their revenue from gaming. Right. So obviously that means you have to have a much broader education if you want to be an executive in this field. Now, I know you work closely with the hospitality school here at UNLV. Is there plans to increase that to kind of look more at that?
Yeah, we're very much part of the hotel school. We're all hotel school faculty, and so we don't work with them. We are the hotel school. And so yeah, one of the nice things is that we can offer courses on, for example, integrating the convention business into your casino business, integrating food and beverage, where we have courses in the room that you and I are sitting in right now, where we show how food and beverage comps, for example, might work together with slot operations. We have all sorts of professors that explore issues like entertainment and the expanding entertainment offerings and showroom offerings and how to sort of, again, integrate that in the so-called integrated resort, to use the new euphemism. That's an important, I think that's one of the things that we've done well in the past, and I think we can do even better as we expand. And we're looking at a moment where maybe, just maybe, you know, we might be hiring some new folks after years of cutbacks. Mm-hmm. We in the hotel school haven't been immune to that. We've seen significant cuts. And bringing in new academics who bring this sort of expertise and then incorporating their expertise into gaming settings, I think that's an exciting development. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Okay.
No problem.
What is, you know, research is an important part of any university, certainly. UNLV is very famous for its research. What is your personal agenda for research now that you're head of IGI?
You know, I think that the casino operations research, for which we're very well known, will continue, certainly. Tony Lucas is, I think, the world's leading slot operations researcher, probably casino operations researcher as well, certainly the best published. Mm-hmm. And he's somebody who has, almost like the film Moneyball, questioned a lot of long-held assumptions, and at the very least insisting upon data. And he's not alone. So there are people up and down the strip that are insisting upon that as well. One of the things that I really hope to increase the circulation of is our Gaming Research and Review Journal. It's the only business-oriented academic peer review journal in the field.
Right.
It's one that's been getting stronger every year, and we've accepted really strong academic submissions from all over the planet. And I think, if anything, we haven't tooted our own horn enough, and we haven't promoted that as well as we could have, because I think we really are seeing, perhaps for the first time, again, this would have been very alien to my great-grandfather dealing at the marina years ago, but the sort of ways in which we see a convergence between really hard, high-level math skills and casino operations, that's an exciting development. Obviously, we're a business of math, and the sophisticated mathematicians that are now joining the fray on the research side is very exciting. On the policy side, we like to talk about the sort of walls inward work that I was just discussing with Tony Lucas, but also then a walls outward body of research where, as you know, as we all know, the gaming industry is not like the furniture industry where you can sort of open up shop anywhere you like. It's one of those rare industries that the government gets to decide where and when you open up shop. Mm-hmm. And as a result, policy research and all the things that are associated with, again, what I would call walls outward considerations in the gaming industry will still be important. And that was Shannon's passion. Yeah. Shannon really was sort of a policy guy. I would say since then we've gone a little more operational.
Right.
But we still, you know, hopefully haven't neglected that side. But the gaming industry is a unique business because you need to know the walls inward stuff and you need to know the walls outward stuff.
You know, that kind of leads into a sociology question. Certainly the sociology of gaming is real important. Have you written any books or articles about that?
Well, what a great question. Thank you for that. I teach a course on the sociology of gaming, and this looks at what is increasingly, of course, a global gaming industry. I just completed the very last lecture of the semester. You can hear my voice. I'm losing my voice, and it's been a long semester. But we covered no less than 77 unique jurisdictions in that global tour. Sociologists have a ton of tools to examine those sorts of things. Things like culture, things like, you know, some of the challenges associated with exporting our Las Vegas product to new shores, and the sort of cultural understanding that's necessary to do those sorts of things. That's all sociology. I mean, sociology at its base is trying to keep your finger on the pulse of what's moving the masses. And that's an important skill in any business. If you've got that figured out, you'll run a pretty successful business. So, again, part of our argument here has been that macro-level considerations are actually important in a sophisticated gaming industry in 2011.
Yeah, no question about it. You mentioned Tony Lucas. You know, you've got a whole selection of really high-end professors here, not only in the hospitality and gaming school, but also economics, real estate.
We do.
Is there any chance we could get them more involved with IGI?
Boy, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, I would love for that to happen. Again, this is Shannon's voice speaking. But I want this to be the place where the debates of the day are held.
Right.
I'm not sure that we're going to provide airtight solutions. We're not always going to be able to do that. But I want this to be a place where summits are held, where we get the economists in, talking to the real estate folks, talking to the policy folks. Again, talking about issues like, you know, what's China going to do, and what sorts of considerations do we need to take in it? What do we need to think about when South Korea legalizes? Will there be an equal and opposite reaction in Japan, or vice versa? Again, these sorts of big picture debates, this is the place that I want those to be housed. And so hopefully collaboration with any number of different entities, that'll be the case. But yeah, we do have some strong, and frankly, we have academics outside of UNLV, and there are academic minds that study the gaming industry very rigorously and with the methodology that I would be quite proud of as a professor with goofy credentials, that we would welcome in here because they're rigorous intellectuals debating the issues of the day.
Now, I know you've been involved in the problem gambling area for a long time. Yeah. I think you're on the board of the NCRG, is that correct?
I've been on various boards of the NCRG, all the Alphabet Soup, the National Council on Problem Gambling, all the different groups. Yeah.
Is it possible to be both an advocate for problem gambling treatment as well as the industry?
I think so. I think that, clearly this is a product, like many products, that hurts some of its customers some of the time. The analogy I used in my class earlier today was the bottled water industry, which seems like a perfectly innocuous industry that couldn't possibly hurt people. And yet we've seen in marathons, we just had a marathon here in Las Vegas, that excessive water consumption can actually hurt you. So even with that product, engaging it to excess can hurt some of its customers. So the question becomes for modern businesses, how do you handle the social costs? How do you deal with this? And in many ways, when you look back at the gaming industry and compare it to the alcohol industry and the cigarette industry, I think the American gaming industry has done quite well. One of the things I would love to maybe explore in global gaming business is the way in which Australia is headed in a very opposite direction. You've written about this. And in large part because of a mishandling of this issue. You look at it, 10 years ago, both of us were going through a national inquiry into our gaming industries, Australia and the U.S. 10 years later, Australia's is back with a vengeance. It's like one of those horrible Hollywood sequels where there's two villains and four robots that are going after you this time. It's way worse with the second productivity commission. And I think, very honestly, you can attribute a lot of that to the foresight of the AGA, the way in which the industry has addressed it. And I think the industry has a lot to be proud of. Is there more to do? Is one problem gambler too many? Absolutely. And we need to advocate for the small percentage of people to be able to have, as the founding figure in treatment, Robert Custer used to put it, a hospital at the bottom of the ski slope, Some people are going to break their legs skiing. It doesn't make skiing a bad thing. Most people are smiling while they're skiing, but you better be sure you have a hospital at the bottom of the hill. So that advocacy for the hospitals at the bottom of the metaphorical hills around the gaming world, I think, remains an important thing. And once more, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who is a pioneer in more important spheres of the gaming industry than Shannon Bybee, who was the first person to really sort of engage this issue in the Nevada industry and hosted the first Problem Gambling Summit here in this building.
That's right.
So, again, that was something I think that Shannon would want for us to continue, and certainly we're committed to.
Yeah, no question. Well, just to get a little personal here, you mentioned your grandfather a couple of times. You're obviously a Nevada native, and it goes back generations. So do you feel you have a special feel then for the gaming industry in Nevada? Your father's the head of the Nevada Gaming Commission.
This is true. Yes.
So you've got deep roots in the community as well as in the industry. Is that going to really help you lead this organization up?
Yeah. Gosh, I hope so. I was one of those. I went away to college, and then I chased a ball around overseas for a couple of years. Whenever I tell people where I'm from, we don't have this experience.
Right.
People's eyes would light up, but then they'd start to worry about you a little bit, right? There are all sorts of assumptions and baggage. And I started off, very honestly, as a very typically defensive Las Vegan. And through careful mentorship of a number of professors, I think I got a little less defensive. But that intimacy and understanding of what it's like to grow up in the shadows of the bright lights is something that hopefully I never lose, because that's one of the key research questions I think that the global gaming industry is facing. Is again, what are the impacts when you put these things up in communities around the world? Well, I know some answers to that because I played Little League ball here and
went to
church at the United Methodist Church across the street. I learned how to swim in the pool here on the UNLV campus. There are a million stories like that in Las Vegas, and I think those are stories that need to be told and aren't often told, even today. I mean, it's far less so today that people sort of look at you funny when you're from Las Vegas, but there still is sort of a belief about the types of lives that are led in the shadows of the bright lights. So
sure, absolutely. Well, I don't want to keep you on hard with your voice.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, so, I apologize. My voice is
it's not
going.
A problem. I do have one more question, though. We talked often in this interview about Shannon Bybee and his vision for this place. But, you know, as smart as Shannon was, I don't think he could even envision online gaming the way it's gone up.
Yeah.
You know, so there's got to be some a progressing of his vision up and updating of his vision. What is your vision of for IGI?
Well, as it pertains to online gaming in particular, I think the vision of a place where the global gaming industry comes to learn is a really noble vision, and it sounds corny, I know, but I'm a professor, I'm biased. This is what I do, right? I mean, I want this to be the place where the debates are heard, where we churn out the future leaders of the gaming industry, but that also, again, we take some time to take a step back and consider things critically. As it pertains to online gambling, there simply is no other way. If we engage in an exercise that we do in my sociology class, and we take a sort of sociological step back and think about 20 years from now, is commerce going to be more or less in the cloud? Is gambling going to be more or less in the cloud? Clearly, it's going to be more. And the sooner that we recognize that in Nevada, the sooner we recognize and hopefully facilitate that as a knowledge factory, if you will, here in the Gaming Institute, the better. So, it's exciting. I mean, I remember I was lecturing today about 1989 and the Mirage opening and feeling like this changed what I aspired to be as a loss. This changed the game, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like that moment right now. I'm worried we might drop the ball. I'm worried that Nevada as a whole might not take advantage of a moment that might really help transform the city and the state into a global command center of an online and brick-and-mortar gaming industry. But hopefully we'll be there for the ride. Hopefully we'll be contributing to the debate.
Great. Well, we certainly like to help you spread the word about this place and about what you're doing, so consider us fans as well.
Oh, boy. We're big fans of Global Gaming Business. This is the best periodical in the biz. And so, we'd be happy to, speaking of building bridges, to build bridges with your audience.
Great. Well, again, congratulations. Thanks, and we're going to keep our eyes on it because we know this is going to continue to grow and make IGI really the center of the education universe for the industry.
Boy, I hope so. Yeah, come visit us, and thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.